Hello, everyone. Welcome to the BBRSCA Waypoints Radio Show. This is our first episode of what is going to be a regular series of in-season updates on KDLG Radio. And we've got some great guests here with me today. My name is Andy Wink. I'm the Executive Director for the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association. And also with us is Rob Ryerson. Rob, can you introduce yourself for people?
Yes, my name is Robert Ryerson. I'm with TradeX Foods. We are a quite a large distributor and wholesaler, import-export of a variety of fish, but salmon being our lead product. And we distribute, buy, sell, process, all different facets of the product.
Excellent. Thanks for being with us today. We also have BBRSCA President Michael Jackson.
Good morning. Thanks, Andy, and thanks, Rob. I think I'm here more as a fisherman than as president of the RSDA, because I think I'm representing our fleet on this phone call to ask questions and gain insights from Rob, who is a resource that we are very, very lucky to have today. And then we've got Andy, who is our wonk, and he can crunch numbers like nobody else. So he can explain that to the fleet. Rob can explain market conditions, and I can ask the questions hopefully you all would ask, or if I miss any, you can also write in, we can address them next time.
Yeah, exactly. And so we are going to be discussing where the market is right now for Bristol Bay sockeye. That's going to be the bulk of our show today. And then we're also going to talk a little bit about how BBRSCA and the fleet can work together to pursue the mission of making the fishery as valuable as it can be. And so we're going to talk about some outreach things that we have for the fleet.
Before we discuss market conditions, we want to point out that this show was pre-recorded. We taped this show last week under the assumption that none of the major processing companies would have announced a base price by today. However, last weekend, Peter Pan Seafoods did announce that the company will pay $1.10 per pound for Bristol Bay sockeye. So we're splicing in this little disclaimer to let you know that our show won't include any discussion of the Peter Pan base price.
You know, let's get into it with the market conditions. Last year, we saw the base price for Bristol Bay sockeye decline a lot. And with the pandemic ramping up, that created a whole bunch of business risk. And so as far as where we're at now, it does seem like there's a few things that are the same. But I think what we've learned over the past 12 months is that people really like seafood. They had no problem buying it at retail, and we saw retail sales expand quite a bit. You know, just some numbers to kind of set this up. Salmon sales increased 25% in 2020 at retail. Frozen salmon sales were up 34%. Salmon is the second most popular species after shrimp. Sales of $3.4 billion for salmon compared to $4.8 for shrimp. And a stat I thought was interesting was ASME, Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, and their contractor Data Essential, in a survey they found that 26% of general consumers bought seafood for the first time during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Rob, what do you think we've seen happen in retail, and what do you expect to stick or not stick?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many companies pivoted when the pandemic hit that the that were food service driven, and food service it was a big part of our business, the same for sockeye and for Bristol Bay, for all our salmon species. And a lot of companies pivoted towards marketing, I think, better and more aggressive. I don't know what it attributes to people buying more fish. I guess they're getting more comfortable on eating it or at eating it and cooking it, which has always been a problem. But, you know, as we saw from last year, the pricing has gone up from the beginning of the salmon season and the end of the salmon season. The pricing went up fairly, not, I wouldn't call it dramatically, but the prices were high. And then so now people, what their anticipation is for this year is that the prices are going to be start out medium to high pricing and continue on a high level. But one of the factors that's really interesting this year that we're finding is we have multiple container commitments into the retail and food service, for but mostly retail, for fillets. I haven't seen it that aggressive before. I've never seen where people are booking based on, you know, we still haven't set a price, we still haven't set quantities, but I think in a minimum with our company, we're multiple containers of sockeye fillets, more specifically. I see a lot of activity in the smoking area where people are, so European smokers that we talk to are saying that their supply, that they were oversupplied still last year, all of a sudden their supply is gone. And so there's a lot more inquiry and aggressiveness towards the product, which in my opinion will be good for the fishermen, definitely in the long run, and for the overall sales of the product. So hopefully I answered your question right there, but for what happened last year and what happened this year are going to be two different things. And I think volume is going to be the issue. I think volume is going to be, can we supply enough? I mean, we're talking very large retailers that are looking at already putting ads on from whatever last year's supply was still available to the new year. And that's going to eat up supply. And you're right, the consumer's buying it. I've never seen such activity like I'm seeing right now. You know, we've all worked really hard at making sockeye fillets a North American cuisine, not just an export cuisine where it goes to Japan or stays, or a lot of it sent to Europe. And I think we've done a great job, and maybe too good of a job, because it's going to fly off the shelves. And I'm not too sure where the pricing is going to settle out, but I think people are getting used to paying the prices that are out there right now, which are higher than I've seen them in a while.
So I think what's interesting with what you're saying there, Rob, is that, you know, you're seeing the companies that need to procure their supply being more aggressive. And my guess is that last year, with all of us not knowing what the next couple weeks would bring, you know, that's not the time to be really aggressive and making long-term deals. So that seems to be a big difference between this year and last year, right?
Yeah, last year we were doing shipments week to week, basically, because people didn't really know how it was going to run. But as the year progressed and we got into the latter part of last year and the beginning parts of this year, I mean, we've seen people already stepping in to pre-book. So obviously, you know, the one thing about retail is they know what they're doing. So they're onto something. They know something's good, and I think they're going to stick with it. Like I said prior, I've never seen that much activity on product coming from Alaska. And you're right, even on Canadian snow crab, if we get a, you know, you're up in the 20, I think over $20 range on Canadian snow crab, and you get a load in and it's gone in 5 minutes. I've never ever seen that in the history of the company. So that's all good signals to me. I think every market's got a price to bear and can only absorb so much, but it seems like it's happening and it's steady.
We hear all this good news. We hear all this optimism. We hear all these sales reports. You said, I think, 25% increase in salmon as a species, 34% in frozen salmon. And so a couple of questions for you, Rob. First is, do you see this as a short-term reaction or a long-term trend? Do you think people have had the chance to shift their buying habits and this is now part of their habit? Or is this just a reaction to lessening of the COVID restrictions, being able to go out? So that's one question. And now follow up with, is this a good opportunity then, because of this increased demand, to try out different product forms in the market for when or if there isn't this kind of demand for the fillets?
Well, I mean, to answer your first question, I think the demand was there with the pandemic. So the demand for our products increased quite a bit. As a matter of fact, I think fillets, I pulled a statistic out before the meeting, and fillets was predominantly sockeye fillets, but was one of our number one performers this year. My fiscal year goes from June to May. So it was a major performer in, if you look at it from a calendar year or my fiscal year. So I think that we've already passed that hurdle of it being a pandemic. I think that people are, then to get into your second part, is I think people have gotten a flavor for the product. I think people have gotten a flavor for being able to taste it, taste profile, cook it, different options, different shipping. People are shipping home cooked or homemade meals, and you know, all the stuff that's going on in retail. And even for our own company, we've designed our own retail line. That's Bristol Bay Sockeye is our number one product on our retail line. And it's in our case, it's buy caught in America, processed in America, sold in America. But we've seen where this portion product with butter pucks or with rubs is very popular. And so with all that, I think people have gotten the flavor, gotten used to cooking it, and are coming back for more because it's a product you can really rely on, hopefully, you know, year through year. So is it a good trend? Excellent trend. Is it a long-term trend, to try and answer your question? I think we're on a roll here. I think that it's something that's here to stay.
Excellent.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because you mentioned Japan, Rob, and, you know, I was looking back at some data. You know, it used to be that Bristol Bay Sakai generally either went frozen to Japan or went in a can. And, you know, over the span of 15 years, the market share for canned and Japanese exports for us is probably under 15% now. And mm-hmm. So it really is being driven by North American retailers as well as the European smokers. And I think it's just hats off to the fishermen investing in quality and getting a quality product out, and the processors for recognizing that, you know, if we're going to shift to more fillets and, you know, shift to different markets, that's going to require different things, different quality. And so, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, prices were really great back in the 80s or 90s. And, you know, but the world changes. And do you have any thoughts on sort of that transformation of this sockeye market that we've seen over the last 15 years?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right about quality. I mean, Bristol Bay has had its moments, and I think that the hats off to the processors and the fishermen and everybody that worked towards getting that to being a better product, because I've never heard the name mentioned more. And that's part and parcel to what you guys are doing too, Andy. And I've never heard it mentioned as much as I do now. And in our buying meetings and in our sales meetings, I hear it. It's often commented on. If you look at the Japanese consumer, I read the other day that the Japanese consumer, which were educated in the United States, are eating less seafood when they go back to Japan. So that's a pretty interesting statistic, and you can see it even in salmon. That's one point I wanted to bring up. And the second point is that look at the two big purchases of companies. And, you know, when they're, in my opinion, when they were Japanese owned, when the North Pacific was Japanese owned and Peter Pan was Japanese owned, those products I would think had a priority going to Japan first.
Well, just to give people the context there, the exports to Japan as a percentage of all the frozen H&G sockeye produced in Alaska, it was 70% in 2005, went directly to Japan. In 2020, that was down to 6%. So, you know, it's really quite an achievement. I think that this fishery has sort of survived and thrived, and you know, all while losing it really its primary older market.
Yeah.
And now we're on to something, I guess, new and exciting, and that we see growing. You know, you mentioned volume. The forecast in Bristol Bay is pretty big this year, but we've seen runs not do so well in other areas. You know, do you have any thoughts about what to expect sort of volume-wise for sockeye this year, as well as, you know, maybe Akita or Coho or even farm salmon?
Yeah, you know, I'll address the sockeye first. So, yeah, we all know the statistic that's coming out. I did hear of a couple meetings that were held with Fish and Game. I only heard this through third parties that there's going to be more fish than expected of the fishery. And I also heard that they're going to be smaller than they anticipated. So, you know, that just means more fish to me. But, you know, I don't know how. I can't really comment. I think it's a good thing that the quantity that's going to come out. But I mean, honestly, we could sell every pound we get. It's not going to be to the sockeye won't be our issue this year. And will that affect the market? I think if it's ran smoothly like it has been, and people just keep pushing it through the system and create a quality product, it's going to keep on flowing. Once again, I'm back to the North American thing. So, you know, where's all that fish going? That was going 70% of it was going to Japan. Well, big uptake is in the United States and Canada too. I mean, there's a grocery store right across the street from my office and they have sockeye on promotion all the time. But the, and to comment on pinks and chums, I mean, pinks are going to be, it's going to be the Wild West, I believe. Who knows what's going to happen there. It's, if they come in like they're supposed to, there's going to be an awful lot of pink salmon. Can the market absorb that? Absolutely. The guys who advertise salmon and don't put a species on it, whether it's in their retail packaging, whether it's on their menu, they'll flip and flop, and they need that option, a lot of them. And I've actually seen companies that are large chum supplier, large chum buyers, request pinks this year, only pinks. So they're anticipating a lesser price. I'm hearing prices kicking around already. I've seen some high prices. I've seen some medium prices, but it's too early to determine, I think, for commitments. And as far as chums, I think my opinion, personal opinion is chums got hurt last year. They got hurt relatively bad, and they got hurt with no supply and high demand. And then once the high demand's not met, they go to another product. And example was pinks. You know, we ship multiple portioned pink portions out, way more than we ship the chums. Obviously, there was no chums to ship, but now those consumers have a flavor for it. So, you know, I just think it, I think it affected the overall chum. Is there going to be enough for people to purchase? Yeah, I mean, there's always going to be your chum buyers. I got a feeling the prices are going to be high this year. And every rumor that I hear, they're going to be high this year. So, you know, that's good for the fishermen, for sure. I don't know what the market will bear on a chum. And as you know, Andy and MJ, you might know as well, when your chums compete with Farmed Atlantics on day in and day out, Atlantics have been on the rise as well, but they compete together. And all it needs is for somebody to pull the plug on a Farmed Atlantic ad, and that sends things south real fast.
Well, you mentioned fish size. How do you see, you know, fish size affecting things this year? Because, you know, once that small fish is turned into a fillet, it doesn't seem to it doesn't seem to have the same discount associated with it. Sure, there's some lower yield, but, you know, is the supply chain kind of coming around to learning that, hey, you can take these smaller fish and still produce a very good fillet that's in very high demand?
Yeah, I think the price disparaging the price between the two has closed. The difference is closed. Where it was $1.20, I mean, I've seen it come down at least 20, 25 cents. Every year is different, so we always have to remember that. Every year if we had MJ's crystal ball, we could try and predict it. But every year is a little different. But I have seen a lot more use of smaller fillets than I've seen, because what's happening is people are getting used to it. And as a retail ring, I think when you're, you know, a 0.95 to 1.5 pound fillet, that's got a nice retail ring, better than a 2 to 4 pound fillet for if you're trying to feed a family of four. But what will happen this year is I believe the smokers are going to grab a big portion of the 46s if they can. And they're going to bid that market up, again, in my opinion, because they're out of supply, and that's the only size they need for their machinery. They can't, very hard for them to cut 2 to 4s. So they need to secure as much as they can.
MJ, you sell some fish directly, and I'm curious, what are you hearing from them?
It's funny you asked me that. I just had a question for Rob regarding sourcing, because he said a lot of his clients are calling out for Bristol Bay sockeye. Even his sales staff is mentioning it on a regular basis. What I found this year selling, and I sell locally and regionally, and I don't sell huge volume, but the new customers that I've had, they've been asking for Bristol Bay sockeye, and I'll ask why Bristol Bay sockeye. And a lot of it has to do with the messaging associated with our habitat, and they learned about that through the Fight Against Pebble Mine. So our sustainability, our habitat, people are attracted to, and the advertising of that is what's drawing in new customers. The sourcing is critical at the direct market level, and that's why I was wondering from Rob, how critical is it in a larger sales force? Are people calling out for Bristol Bay at the stores, or is it just sockeye?
It's probably a 50-50. Some of the Bristol Bay, if they ask for anything, it is Bristol Bay, or they don't ask at all. That's sort of the way it goes. You know, I think there's an impression that certain areas like Peterson Point and Togiak and some of those areas are a more premium product, but those, a lot of those have typically gone to the smokers or to Japan as well. So I don't think people are as familiar with that. Bristol Bay is doing a great job of getting their name out there. If it is requested, it comes up Bristol Bay or nothing.
Thanks for that. And that's been my experiences. We've got a pretty informed clientele down here in the Northwest as far as salmon, and in particular, Alaskan salmon. And the people that ask about it for the first time generally know about Alaskan salmon, but they're curious about Bristol Bay sockeye. And I have point of sales materials that the BBRSDA provides for direct marketers. And it not only attracts people to buy the fish, it educates them on the region. And then we've got another convert in support of taking care of the habitat. So it's been a really good year for direct marketers because they've been forced to go out and get some frozen food and we've been able to provide it.
This has been great discussion about market conditions. With what time we've got left here, we should probably get in a little bit and touch on, you know, what can fishermen do or what can the BBRSDA do? So, you know, I'd like to kind of turn this back a little bit more towards MJ. You know, we've been talking about market conditions. How can fishermen set themselves and the fishery up to be in the best position going forward? Do you have any thoughts on that, MJ?
Yes, they should catch their fair share and a little bit more. End of story. I myself as a fisherman, that's my goal every year. I just want to catch my fair share and a little bit more. I mean, it's the usual stuff. When you're a harvester of a resource, you have to make sure your equipment, crew, all of that's top-notch, ready to go. That's all the nuts and bolts of it. As far as the price, there's not a whole lot that we can do as fishers to affect the price other than the quality that we deliver. So, of course, we're going to put quality at the top, keep our fish chilled, bleed, anything that we can do as a best practice to keep our fish at the top of the heap.
I'd also say, fishermen, you know, this fishery is so old, so abundant. It's got an amazing story. There's not a lot of other foods out there that have such a rich history and story. And so, you know, I'm hoping that we can see more fishermen get involved to help us market the fish. We're in over 2,000 retail stores doing promotions, working with Tradex. You know, you heard Rob talk about how people are, you know, there's buzz about Bristol Bay. And so I think there's really an opening there, an opportunity to tell the story, but we need engagement from fishermen, because fishermen out there, you know, you guys are the stars. You're what the consumers want to know about. And so we hope to bring more and more of those stories to consumers in months and years to come. And a little bit that I wanted to talk about as we kind of wrap up our time here is, you know, stay involved with BBRSDA, keep up with the market info that we put out, and we've got a photo contest going on. You can go on our website after you get back and learn about how to upload photos, and there's some prizes, some cash prizes there. That stuff's all great content for us to help tell your story. Also, fisherman profiles, we've got a link on our website where you can, you know, it's so great to have pictures as well as quotes and be able to tell somebody's story. And so if you can fill out a fisherman profile, that just helps so much. We've also got a merchandise line, a merch store. You know, we market your fish with a branded Bristol Bay sockeye brand. And we've got some awesome hoodies, t-shirts, and hats on there. We sell them at cost. So they're, you know, pretty affordable. And, you know, again, that's just another way that you can represent your fishery. And if we've got pictures of that, of course, that just makes it that much easier to market. MJ, did you want to talk at all about proposals? And, you know, we've got our kind of fall budgeting cycle coming up. Sure. How can fishermen get involved in that?
You bet. Yeah. Thanks for asking. How the fleet can get involved. I like the fact you mentioned the photo contest. I think it's important that people realize, like from the direct marketing point of view, those photos are used and they're real people showing real activities in real time. They're critically important. And the more people that put that in, the more access we have to different markets, more diversity. So I would encourage people doing that. It really helps. It helps. We sell the sizzle, they buy the fillet. So we're selling the story of the fisher person, the boats, the habitat, and then they'll buy the fish. We need more stories. Well, so Andy, you had asked how the fleet can get involved, and every fall we go through the proposal process and set our budget. If people have ideas on their own, they can go to the website and find a proposal template. It's pretty cut and dried. You just fill in the gaps. And I'll give you an example of the most recent successful proposal. We had one of the fleet members, Andy Vlahovic. He wanted to do a crew training program because there's a dearth of trained crew. And the learning curve for Bristol Bay is not a curve, it's a cliff. You show up, you get the boat ready, you go out and you start fishing 24 hours a day. And you have to know how to get the fish out. So what Andy wanted to do was show the basics of what a boat is like.
Anthony, right? I just wanted to make sure we got his name right. Yeah. Anthony? Yeah. Sorry, okay.
And then we let him make the proposal. We helped him where he needed it. And he just recently completed crew training up in Naknek for, I believe, 4 participants. We're waiting for the final report, but he did that all on his own. He did it all by himself, and it's helping improve the fleet because we're going to get saved for crew members. That's one proposal, but there's many things. Anybody that has ideas can write a proposal. And they'll be voted on by the different committees on the board, and then they'll be brought to the full board for a vote for funding. So speaking of the committees, that's another way that you can participate. If you're interested in serving with the BBRSDA and helping shape opinion and how the organization moves forward, you can request to be put on a committee. And we've got sustainability committee, quality committee, outreach committee, marketing committee. All of those currently have some of the fleet members on board, and we'd like to continue that tradition and get more input from the fleet so we're not, as a board, making decisions in a vacuum.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say, even if you're not as willing to jump in with both feet like Anthony, even if you have an idea for what would make this fishery better, send us an email to info@bbrsta.com. Let us know. We might know contractors out there that can bring your idea to life. We just need to know about it. And preferably we'd probably get those things by September 1st or earlier to have the most consideration, but we do accept them at any time. Some other things for fishermen, being informed, and a great way to be informed is go to our website, again, bbrsda.com. You can sign up for our monthly newsletter there. It's also called Waypoint. And, every month we're going to share news and what we're doing to try to advance the mission. So that's a very easy way. It takes a couple minutes to read each month and you'll be informed. We have market info there. And you can dive in as deep as you want. And of course, we also have meetings. Our meetings, our board meetings are open to our members, and we really encourage everyone to join them. Even if you can't be there in person, and with the pandemic, our meetings have been virtual. But even if they are in person, let us know if you want to be there. We can probably get you patched in on the phone, or even better, show up in person. We'll have some meetings this fall, definitely one around the Pacific Marine Expo time. And so we hope to see you there as well as at the show, if we're able to make it. And finally, our social media, we try to post a lot there and just keep people up to speed. Facebook is an easy way to do that. Again, you just search BBRSDA. And you'll find our page there. And for some of the funner stuff, some of the more just fishery culture stuff, we also have an Instagram account, which is Bristol Bay All Day. And so we encourage you to get involved with that. One of our board members, Nell's, kind of spearheaded getting that going. And there's a lot of great stuff that's shared on there. So I really hope that fishermen have found this program useful, and I hope that you'll get involved and reach out to us. We'll keep reaching out to you. And before we sign off here, any closing thoughts from MJ or Rob?
No, I think you guys are all doing a really good job, and looking forward to a successful year this year, and pretty excited about the upcoming openings.
And I'd just like to thank Rob for being part of this. I've learned quite a bit, and I know our fleet has as well, and I look forward to being able to access you as a resource in the future. And thanks for putting this together, Andy. I hope I didn't detract from the quality too much. I did my best, which is sometimes not enough.
Thanks a lot, you guys.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much.
And just one last thing, thank you to the fishermen as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you guys all out there. Be safe, catch a lot of fish, and we'll talk again soon. So with that, I'm Andy Wink, Executive Director for BBRSDA. Thanks for being with us. This has been the BBRSDA Waypoints Radio Show. Good fishing and good luck.